Thanks for joining us on the Space Show, Blake.
Yeah, no worries. Glad to be here.
Could you tell us what Black Sky is and what you do?
Sure. Black Sky, we're a propulsion and launch service provider. So we manufacture solid rocket fuel, and we also have vehicles that the fuel obviously propels. Suborbital system sounding rockets is what we primarily do at the moment, and we're working on an orbital program at the moment, so hopefully have that be launching in the not-too-distant future.
And where are you based?
We're based in Queensland. We're just south of Brisbane, but we have a launch site. We actually operate the only civilian suborbital launch site that's permitted to fly above controlled airspace at the moment, about 5 hours west of Brisbane, hour north of Gundawindi.
Have you done any launches there yet?
Yeah, we have. Last year we did a couple of launches. In fact, on November 21, we did the first commercial payloads launched in Australia on a suborbital rocket. So we had three payloads on board for UQ's composites manufactured a panel for Hypersonics, who are commercialising the scramjet program out of UQ. We had AXA, the Australian Centre for Space Engineering Research, one of their space rated GPSs, and another company, Dekunu Technologies, who are developing or have developed a wrist-held device for skydivers. So it was great for them to be able to put their product through some real paces that, you know, hopefully humans don't ever have to experience.
So how high does it go?
So that particular flight, we had to keep it limited to about 20,000 feet, primarily due to weather, and also it was quite funny. We had the worst weather that one day that there's been in 4 months at that site. But the vehicle itself, it can reach that particular vehicle about 90,000 feet, and the other vehicles that we're working on will go well above the Kármán line. For suborbital, and then obviously the orbital vehicles. The particular model we're working on at the moment is designed to do a 400-kilometer sun-synchronous orbit.
Do you go with a Virgin Galactic's definition of space as being 50 miles, 80 kilometers, or do you go for the von Kármán at 100?
It's a tricky question because it depends on what you're doing, I guess. Traditionally, it's always been the 100 kilometres as we've known. Richard Branson, a little cheeky with the 80 kilometres, but it is recognised by the US Air Force. So I'm not really offended with either figure. Look, at the end of the day, getting up there is really the challenge. And if you can achieve 80 kilometres, you can certainly go higher. And look, at the moment, we're just hoping to be able to continue pushing harder up around those altitudes and beyond, because it's going to be great, not only for us, but for the country.
On launch, what, the better term, G-loads, what accelerations do the payloads experience, and what sort of vibration and noise environment?
So we do some static environment testing on the ground to try and simulate what we're doing. One of the core focuses of our suborbital is actually to give customers the ability to test equipment. So there's a big issue at the moment with a lot of upcoming providers for satellites, CubeSats and the likes. And the issue is, if they do put them on orbit, they haven't necessarily put them through its paces. And I guess a lot of space junk can come from that. It's also very expensive to put it up there. So if something doesn't work, it's really expensive because you can't get it back. So some of our suborbital flights are used to actually allow customers to test their payloads before they try and put it on orbit. We can simulate a whole range of different environments, but usually we can push up in excess of 20 Gs if we wanted to. But it's depending on the customer requirements or the flight profile. We can actually bring that down and do different characteristics to actually meet what people need for their flight to be able to test things. And
my understanding is that one of the three QB50 satellites from Australia did not work. Would you have been able to help in that situation? Obviously not after the launch, but in preparation for the launch?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what some of our vehicles will help do. So those satellites, I have heard about their some issues with them. I don't know the specific details, but that's exactly what we're trying to do, is allow customers to fly that exact payload and then we bring it back to them so they can look at it, characterize it. If it worked perfectly, great, put it on orbit. If it did have issues, it's a much cheaper and easier alternative, so they can get the physical item back, fix it, and go again.
So that raises the issue of recovery.
Sorry, recovery?
Recovery of the payload.
Yeah, exactly. So ours are all brought back. The suborbital side of things, we bring them all back under parachute. And so they have gentle landings, and we do recover the entire vehicle The vehicles generally aren't reusable. We can refuel certain things, but usually we'll fix up a new vehicle each time, depending on what the profile is. But we do recover the entire vehicle and the payloads.
What's the vehicle made of?
Primarily, it's composite materials, a mixture of carbons and glass. That's the core of the vehicle. There are other components in there with aluminium and the likes. Again, depends on the profile what we will do. So, for example, when we did the payload for Hypersonics, they manufactured a carbon-carbon sick combination. So it's actually a ceramic-type profile. So really, really strong heat resistance. But what was so critical is we had embedded sensors into the panel, and that allowed them to be able to test the sensors prior to putting it onto hypersonic flight. So we can use different materials, again, depending on the requirements.
Have you drawn inspiration from Rocket Lab's composite Electron rocket?
Not so much from their composite vehicle itself, but the aspirations that are driven from Rocket Lab is the fact that as a, well, our eighth state, we'll call them, over in New Zealand, the fact that they have been able to achieve what they have in a relatively short time frame, is that's really inspirational. And the smaller type of vehicle, our technology is obviously different using solids, but it is, it's really good what they have done. And I think really driven the smaller scale of launch providers to show that it is possible.
You're going to go above 100 kilometres eventually with the same vehicle or a different one?
The vehicles come in a range of different sizes. So the same design, but just a different vehicle, so a slightly larger vehicle. The one that we flew in November was our CIDR 190. The number represents the diameter of the vehicle. So our CIDR 260, which is a development vehicle at the moment, it's going through some testing right now, and we're hoping to have that launched in the first half of this year.
Do you have any aspirations for orbital operations?
Yeah, so as I said before, that's one of our other streams, is the orbital side. We're currently working on the DARPA Launch Challenge, which is a program in the US, and they're looking for responsive launch vehicles. So that's something that we're definitely aspiring to and working towards, but we're stepping stones with the suborbital rockets, which will then lead into our orbital capability.
How do you find the bureaucracy? Getting licenses to launch and things like that.
Yeah, very bureaucratic. challenging. We've dealt with the likes of CASA for a long time. With our launch site that we already run, we already have a lot of systems and processes in place. But as Australia evolves with the space agency now on board, it's going to be interesting to see how that all, turns out with new legislation. But we're working closely with the agencies to try and help them shape it to suit. With the program we're working on in the US, we also work closely with the FAA. So there's a lot of heritage there. They obviously know what they're doing, having dealt with a lot of space companies, launch companies. So we're trying to take that knowledge, combine it with what we're doing here, and hopefully it won't be too difficult in the future as the space agency evolves. But currently it is challenging, like anything, bit of an unknown. But we'll keep working with them and make sure that it's available for everybody.
For orbital launches, where would you launch from?
So for orbital, there's a couple of launch sites coming on board in Australia already. Equatorial Launch up in the Northern Territory and Southern Launch in the South. Queensland government have just released a report to say that there's probably opportunities there. And I haven't read it yet, but the parliamentarians literally released a report half an hour ago. So to give you an idea, it's 12:45 on Thursday, and there's opportunities in different places. There's going to be multiple sites around the country. Our site that we operate from is really only good for suborbital, but Equatorial Launch or Southern Launch at the moment, both contenders, and we really look forward to launching at both sites.
So Black Sky obviously doesn't do it as a one-man show. You must have a team of people there. Tell us about that, please.
Yeah, so Black Sky has a core group of about eight guys. They're specialised in different areas, but they're very versed across the entire board. It's a really solid group. of guys, really talented. And because of the specialty in their different various fields, it makes our job a lot easier, or my job a lot easier. It means that we can focus on the required areas as required, but we can also deviate away from that. So if someone in particular is not available at the time, the rest of the team can fill in. Having that smaller group that is actually got those skill sets makes our work a lot more streamlined. We're not trying to learn on the job. We've got a lot of experience in the field, and the combined experience of everybody is what makes, you know, Black Sky so successful.
Are you looking to recruit?
We're always looking to recruit. We are a relatively small organisation at the moment, but with the sign of things to come, I dare say we'll be expanding in the not-too-distant future.
Well, Blake, I hope to hear more from you in the very near future and of your success.
Yeah, thank you, Andrew. It's been great to chat to you.